trying to make sure you listen to all of the Rob as a Podcast episodes every week can be an endurance challenge, but you've always got an advantage when you are subscribed to the Rob as a Podcast newsletter. Get updates about all the shows from the week gone by when you sign up either in the sidebar of robhasawebsite.com or at robhasawebsite.com/newsletter. Hey everybody, what's going on? Rob Cesternino here with another one of our Survivor off-season podcasts. And today I am here live in the studio here with a friend of mine, Miles Nye, who's a Los Angeles game designer. And not like video games, but actually games like challenges that you see on Survivor. And he's actually going to talk to us today about all sorts of different challenges on Survivor. And he has a unique perspective because he is a former consultant on Survivor with the challenge department. Miles, welcome.
Thank you so much for having me, Rob. It's a pleasure to be here.
Yes, and Miles and I have a backstory that Miles actually beat me on a game show at one point on a show called The Experts, and he was the Survivor trivia expert. I was the alleged Seinfeld trivia expert, and there was another guy who was an expert, allegedly, on the Star Wars, the prequels.
I'm not sure that guy had seen the Star Wars prequels.
I don't think so. And Miles was the biggest winner in the history of the show to that point.
It was a stiff competition. When I rewatch it, you know, you answered almost all your questions right, and you wagered well, but I had a good day that day.
You had a good day. Okay, so Miles and I have been, talking since then. We met about a year ago doing that show, and yes, we found out that Miles is a history with Survivor. He is a longtime Survivor fan, seen all the seasons. He knows a ton of stuff about the show. How did you actually come to work with the show?
Like a lot of people who you read interviews and say that they end up in the challenge department, I cold called John Kerhofer and I said, I'm local, I'm a huge fan, started watching shortly before the merge in Borneo and never fell off of every season, every episode, and particularly liked the challenges. As you mentioned, I'm a games guy. Games are my hobby and my passion. And I sent him a brief email saying, hey, I'd love to talk challenges sometime. And when he called me back, he said, I don't understand your email. Do you want a job? And I was like, is that on the table? So I went in and interviewed and pitched some ideas.
Yeah.
And he brought me in as a consultant. This is common knowledge. This has been talked about before. John, as the challenge producer, will sometimes bring in consultants in the pre-production phase. I only work in the United States. I've never been on location.
Mm-hmm.
So I see one side of things. I see one side of the production. I see a certain facet of the work. And really, I think, any talk about challenges on Survivor really has to begin and end with John Kerhofer. You know, I think as a fan of the show, I have the luxury of having worked with John and been in the room and seen him do his thing, which is great. But I think we can all agree he has worked on every episode since the beginning. The number is something like 600 challenges in the series of the show.
Mm-hmm.
It's a marvel. He is a real talent. He provides great leadership. He always stands by his work. Some of the challenges turn out great. Some of them fall short of expectations. But John is someone who shows up to work every day saying, I want to make this challenge the best it can possibly be. And I'm not sure that all shows, I'm looking at you, Amazing Race, have somebody on the team who cares that passionately about making the work good.
Yeah. John's one of the few people that have been with the show from the beginning. And I think that number is like down to like, I'm not sure if it's like six people or something. Like Jeff Probst is on that list.
Yes.
Of people that have been there the whole way through. And there's a lot of new blood that constantly comes into the show, which I think in some ways is a good thing where it's sort of like, fresh brains and fresh blood.
Yes. It's a meritocracy. Like a good idea can come from anywhere. There are a lot of people who work for the show who work, much harder than I do. I come in for a couple days a week for a few weeks during pre-production. And it's like any writer's room. We sit around, we bat around ideas. And then what happens once they go on location largely is a mystery to me. Oftentimes, I'll see things that show up in the editor's like, yes, I remember we talked about that in the room. It may have been months and months ago.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes something in a completely different form. And sometimes, a lot of times, I see great stuff when I tune in to watch the show that I had no foreknowledge about. Nobody talked about it. Someone on location had a great idea and they made it work.
Yeah. So In this conversation, we're going to talk about all sorts of different things concerning challenges, talk about some of the types of challenges, some of the best challenges they've done, some of the things that have not gone so great,
yes.
And just overall a challenge-dominated conversation.
That's right, and 2 points to that. In the tradition of the specialist and chaos cast,
yes.
The self-endowed nicknames, and further in the tradition of the tabulator and the flop, those who have a nom de rehab, you know, with your permission, I might, you know, ask to be referred to as Challenge Lefty.
Challenge Lefty.
As a nom de rehab. Yes, and it gets a bell. That makes me feel
now
great.
Now, why are you the Challenge Lefty? Are you, because you are left-handed?
I'm left-handed like Survivor winner Tyson Apostle. So, yes, I'm left-handed, and I'm mad about challenges. So, I'll refer to Lefty. I'll refer to Challenge. I'll respond to Challenge Lefty. I'll respond to Miles. But, yes, so for today, Challenge Lefty here. And
CL.
CL, yes. I want to think of this talk as, this is not a listicle. This is not the 9 best Survivor challenges. You won't believe what happened next.
Yes.
But more like, if you picture, if there were a museum that were devoted just to Survivor challenges, I want to take you on like a quick walking tour. And, you know, some of the rooms are just going to poke our heads into for a moment and see some oddities in the corner. But this is sort of a 360 degree consideration of challenges because I'm mad about challenges and game shows of all kinds.
Sure. Can I ask you a couple of interview questions beforehand?
Yes.
Can you give us an example of a challenge that you came up with? Maybe you weren't the only guy, not taking all the credit, but something that you created that ended up being in the show.
Here's what I can say. The first season that I worked on was China. And an idea that I pitched during my interview was this notion. There are, you know, most challenges, and, you know, we'll talk more about the, challenges that have a physical and a mental component, and the ones that end with the physical component usually have a great cross that finish line, big TV kind of moment, and the ones that are mental sometimes end with Jeff looking at his card and saying, Rob has it right, and, you know, those aren't necessarily as dramatic for TV purposes, you know, and none of this is a matter of fact, it's all just opinion. But during my interview, I said, you know, if there were a puzzle that were assembled on a heavy base and that had to be dragged across the finish line, you would get the mental catch-up component at the end and that cross the finish line moment.
Mm-hmm.
And that was incorporated into a challenge in China called Blade Runner. That was a challenge, memorably, where Courtney struggled to operate her samurai sword. She kind of tried to cut through the rope like it was a serrated bread knife.
Yeah.
What made me really happy was that was the first season that I worked on. That was an idea that was generated during my audition, my interview with John. And in the final episode, when they do the like day one recap, you know, about 7 minutes where they show everything that's happened since the beginning, the footage of Sharia from Survivor China and one of her tribe mates, I can't remember who, dragging the Blade Runner heavy-based coin puzzle across the finish line made the day one recap cut. And I was like, oh, that's great. You know, that was something that I contributed to the design that aired and then also made the super cut in the final episode.
Do you still work on the show?
I do still, yes. I recently consulted on seasons 29 and 30.
Okay. Do you ever get ideas from people online? Do people ever contact you?
Yeah, like waiters in restaurants offer me ideas.
Yeah.
People offer ideas all the time, and I'm totally open to that.
Okay. I'm sure I'll come up with more questions along the way. Oh, you know, I know your forte is puzzles, and you're part of the National Puzzler Association.
Is that right? I belong to the National Puzzlers League. It's a club. Yeah.
Okay. And so is that where you, you know, come up with most of your ideas, or do you come up with an equal number of puzzles and also physical ideas?
Well, there's such a great learning curve of being in that room. I remember like walking in and learning, for instance, you know, there's so many considerations that John and the team have to take into account that things I as a fan didn't necessarily count on. You know, in this challenge, they're all standing each other in a circle. No, they're not, because then you'll see the cameras. Ah, you know, that's something that I didn't used to think about, but now I've kind of taken into account. I did bring in a lot more puzzle ideas kind of in my early years, but I saw so many of them, wither on the vine, largely because for me, my hobby is puzzles. The more challenging, the better. Bring it on. I'm not thinking like someone who is malnourished and has been sleeping on the ground for 20 days, like the level of difficulty, just those physical considerations of the contestants have to be taken into account. A puzzle that no one can solve because it's too hard and they're too fatigued is bad TV. And that kind of brings up this dualism that I personally think of when I watch the show that is not necessarily accurate, but it can be, for me, sometimes useful. If you imagine Charlie Parsons, who is credited with designing the game, 16 people on an island take turns voting each other out until one person is left, and Mark Burnett, who is credited with making it into fantastic TV. These two guidelines, if you think of the Charlie Parsons style fan and the Mark Burnett style fan, you know, there's a Venn diagram there. One is not merely one or the other. They appear on the spectrum. For myself, I love everything that Mark Burnett has done to make the show great TV. You know, myself, I'm a little bit more of like a Charlie Parsons guy. And again, I recognize that these are sort of arbitrary distinctions, but I like the game side of it a lot. And I recognize that it turns out it makes great TV, and often great game ideas may sometimes have to be sacrificed because it is primetime network TV and it's got to be appealing.
When you talk about the Charlie Parsons version, he did Expedition Robinson. Is that?
Yeah, I think. But
are there no challenges in Expedition Robinson?
I don't know. I've never seen it.
Okay. And so when you talk about the Mark Burnett version, that's sort of like the, you know, challenges, teams.
Well, no. I think that when I think of like, if I'm Mark Burnett, you know, viewing like Mark Burnett decisions or the Mark Burnett aspects of Survivor can be anything. It can be like, you know, bringing Rupert back four times, you know, like that's more of a Mark Burnett thing than a Charlie Parsons thing. Like if the game were like, a lot of fans like myself included say, wouldn't it be great to get 16 first time players on the island, merge them at 10, no switch up, and just see how it plays out. I agree. I think that would be cool. I don't think it's realistic. I think it's never going to happen because there are considerations that I would, using this arbitrary distinction of Mark Burnett style considerations that must be taken into account, that are the reasons why that's not going to happen.
But wasn't that Token Cheese?
It was. Yeah. You're right. There was an Exile Island to it, but, and it played out fantastic.
Yeah.
No, yeah, absolutely. I completely agree. And so I think that that's what's nice about the show. Both of these voices have a seat at the table.
Mm-hmm. Okay, let's get into the puzzle or the challenge conversation.
Yeah, so okay. So I want to start by, we praised John Kerhofer. No challenge talk would be complete without starting there. And I know you've said in the past that you think some of the challenges are a little bit like Price is Right, you know, like, oh, this week it's Plinko.
Right.
The big difference is that on the studio, on the set for Price is Right, they can put those games in a cabinet and take them out when they need them. Oftentimes when there's a new challenge, we're going to redo whatever it is. That build was on another continent 2 years ago, and so it's always from scratch, and that means that there's often iterative improvement. So a game you've seen played before, you know, gets some sort of new embellishment that makes it seem fresh or make, you know.
So if they had to do Cliffhanger and rebuild it every single time on The Price is Right, they would continue to update it and it wouldn't look like the same thing that's been 60 years old?
Could be. Maybe they'd find new ways to update Cliffhanger, like bring in, you know, whatever the name of the alpine skier is, you know, bring his nephew and he's got little alpine skier tattooed on his neck and there'd be a whole new spin on that.
Yeah.
So, okay, what makes a challenge great? You know, I think that really there are a lot of things that can go into making a challenge great or making a challenge disappointment. Ultimately, when it comes down to it, what makes a challenge great is how it plays out on TV. The best challenge on paper or in rehearsal, in the build, a lot depends on what happens. And I have two examples. And, you know, I did a lot. I went back into the vaults. I rewatched challenges in preparation for a talk, which is, for me, really enjoyable. Some people watch the show because they love the strategy and the scheming. And some people watch it because they love the hard bodies. They just want to see Jay Byers or Morgan. You know, there's all kinds of different reasons to watch the show.
Yeah.
I love the challenges.
Okay. And those are probably the lowest common denominator fans, the people that are...
the ones who just want the male
only watch, only watching to see attractive people.
It's funny. There's so many different ways to watch TV. Some people just have it on all the time and like no idea what is happening on Survivor. It's just on. They're like, oh, look.
I have no idea what's happening, but there's attractive people in bathing suits. I'm in.
And those people hate the challenges because they have to listen to Jeff explain the rules for a couple minutes. And they're like, I don't get this. I'm out. Yeah. You know.
But then you have challenges where they're like, you know, sliding on like hot oil and stuff like that. So they got to hang in there, but they get theirs.
They get what they want.
Yeah.
There's something for everybody. That's why it's such a perennially popular show. So two examples at opposite ends of the spectrum. What is it makes a challenge great? There was a reward challenge in Guatemala. It was a huge build, and it ended with a cart racing down an enormous track. To get to the cart, they had to turn a wheel. To turn the wheel, they needed to collect the pegs that they put in the wheel to turn it. To collect the pegs, they had to chop through a rope with a sharp rock. Then they had to cut through a log with a machete. Then run up, get in the cart, turn the thing. Does this sort of ring a bell? Well, what happened was There you go. It did indeed ring a bell. The tribe with Jamie on it, they exploded in the hangar. He's chipping away at the rope with a rock, and he's still there at the starting line at the first station when the other tribe's cart goes zooming past him and wins the reward. And it was unfortunate because they made this huge build. Half of it got wasted. They made a second cart and a track that were never used. And so it was a big, beautiful build, a little bit of a disappointment. So I'd say that was a great challenge, but it wasn't elevated to greatness because it didn't live up to its capacity just because of what happened. It made for great drama. Jamie was a huge failure, let his tribe down. So that now at the other end of the spectrum, switching gears, Survivor Nicaragua.
Yes.
The penultimate immunity challenge. It was a variation on a game we've seen a number of times before, where you've got to visit different stations, answer a question. There's two choices. Reach into the right one and you'll do well. Reach into the wrong one and you've taken a time penalty. It'll slow you down. Many variations on this challenge. In Nicaragua, it was the most stripped down version of the game, I think, ever. For the penultimate immunity challenge, which is often something, you know, big and audacious and amazing, the last two immunity challenges got to be huge. They ran a straight line, stopped at a station, reached into one of two boxes, and brought their puzzle pieces back to the starting line. It was a really kind of two-dimensional, sort of dull, sort of flat challenge. But because Judd, I don't really acknowledge the Fabio nickname.
No love for Fabio?
I love the contestant. I don't love the nickname. That was Shannon's doing,
yes,
right?
Yes.
Shannon left his little imprint. Fabio has much longer hair than Judd, just because the guy's hair is like down to his collar.
It was a dated reference also.
It was a dated reference, so I don't embrace the Fabio reference. To me, he is Judd.
Okay. Yes.
Because Judd was, everybody was going to vote him out if he didn't win.
Yes.
And he did. This sort of dull two-dimensional challenge was pretty exciting to watch at the time. It does not hold up upon a rewatch. The other thing I'll say is that it was coming down rain hardcore when that challenge is played, which, and this is not inside information, makes me wonder if another challenge had to be abandoned maybe and something else filled in. But what makes a challenge great is how it plays out. So the Judd challenge, not great, and yet turned out to be exciting. You know, people were cheering because the guy who was for sure getting voted out, the likable guy,
yeah,
you know, won that immunity.
So there's a couple of different ways that a challenge can work. You know, it sounds like from what you're saying that there's, you know, the way where, you know, it's a challenge could be so complicated, like in its Rube Goldbergness, where there's all these different parts. That's one way a challenge can be particularly epic. There's also the, you know, sometimes the simplest challenges are also I'm not stepping on anything, but like a hand on a heart idol,
yes,
type deal. But then also, you know, for who we're rooting for, if the underdog can win the challenge, that could also provide excitement to a challenge that maybe it's not there in the actual build of the challenge.
Yes, all of these things are in the DNA of what goes into a challenge. And you mentioned a virtue that, and this is all sort of a matter of taste, what makes a great challenge. Like I'm a games guy. I'm not so much a sports guy. Mm-hmm. So many of the full contact games like you know, your Schmergen Brawl or whatever, you know, not necessarily my cup of tea, but a virtue that I think a lot of people really like, or I can only speak for myself, elegance or integration of a challenge. Now the antithesis of this, and this gets a lot of people sort of complain about the you're going to run through an obstacle course and collect bags of puzzle pieces challenge. My friend Tripp, who blogs about Survivor, is like, oh, here comes more bags of puzzle pieces. Now with me, I'm like, what's wrong with bags of puzzle pieces? Like, there are plenty of physical challenges that don't have puzzle components. There's plenty of puzzle challenges that don't have physical components. And there's many, many variations on obstacle courses that have bags of puzzle pieces. It just means somebody who's good at puzzles and not the most athletic has an opportunity to catch up. I think it's good. But I think even better is when the physical and mental can be nicely integrated. I have two examples of challenges that I'm thinking of. Gatecrasher, which premiered in China, and we saw it again in the most recent season. They use a big, heavy log as a battering ram,
yes,
and then the maze is carved into the log. It's a beautiful, integrated physical, mental challenge. And I think that elegance is a virtue that I really appreciate. Another example is Crate Idea. This is the one where the players have to, they all have names, giving it a challenge.
When you pitch an idea for a challenge, do you come up with the name also?
Is absolutely critical.
Yes.
If the name isn't good, the challenge idea will not live on. There's no hope. And then, you know, Survivor's not the only show where this is true. When I was a little kid, I liked Double Dare.
Yes.
And I read, I read a book. I did a book order book through elementary school. They bring it to your desk. And it was a book about Double Dare. And the challenge writers said that sometimes they come up with the name first and then the game after the fact. I've done that too.
Yes. Yes. So you come up with like, okay, Rise of the Planet of the Grapes. All right. All right. So you take all these grapes and then you get to step on them.
Yes.
And then
this is both.
Raise the level of the grape juice.
Oh, yeah.
Fantastic.
So this doubles as a Lucy episode.
Yeah. It
can be a survivor.
Because you're very good with puns as well. So
puns
I feel
are
like.
Good, yeah. And also because of John's, John is the king of the room, classic rock references are always appreciated.
Can you give me an example?
Yeah. Hold on. Let me think about that for a second. Yeah, I can give you an example. There was a challenge idea that did not move forward that was two sides of the coin. It was a memory-style game for individual immunity or reward that you played at a station, and there were coins and whatnot. But that was set, like, I don't listen to a lot of the classic rock bands, so that was me using Wikipedia to look up song titles and being, which of these jumps out at me? It looks like it could be a name of a game. Oh, two sides of a coin. Oh, in this challenge, you will flip coins and, you know.
Why, who's two sides of a coin?
You'd think
we'd have to Wikipedia.
Yeah, Wikipedia. Exactly. Yeah. Sorry. I don't know the answer.
Okay.
So I was talking about. Oh yeah, Crate Idea is what started us on this. The punnily titled Crate Idea. That's where that premiered in Token Sheens. Two at a time have to roll the cubicle crates back to the starting line, and the images painted on the side. This was a big heroic moment for Boston Rob and the Heroes versus Villains season. So that's an instance of physical and mental being integrated.
Yeah. Okay.
So that's something I particularly like about challenges.
Yeah.
I've collected a few rarities, Survivor challenges that didn't maybe got repeated, maybe were played once or twice, but that strike me as like being remarkable in some way or another. And these are not in any particular order, but it's like a trip down memory lane of
take
Survivor
us through it.
Special challenges. So okay, the first one up here is Survivor China. A lot of great original challenges in Survivor China. Then that's not because it was the first year that I worked on, but when you look back on the seasons, there was a lot of great stuff. In China, retention to detail was sort of a fun one that was sprung on them. That was, they did the merge feast, and then Jeff came out and was like, okay, everything that happened at that feast, you were supposed to be paying attention. I'm going to ask you questions about it. Frosty was like, oh no, I have the worst memory. But because he hadn't been drinking at the feast, I believe he won that challenge.
Yeah.
There was fun editing there. They would ask you like, okay, because while they were feasting, some Chinese acrobats came out and performed. And so then during the challenge part, Jeff's like, what color was the pole that the acrobats were swinging from? And they show you the footage, but it's in black and white. And then it like fades into color after he reveals the answer. There were just these, you know, peculiar editing things that came off, I think, were really cool. I mean, that one, I think, is worth a rewatch.
Mm-hmm.
Here's one that I think is a rarity for a different reason. This is the first challenge from Survivor Palau, Supply Dump. They had to make their way through a multi-stage obstacle course, and along the way, they had to collect flint, and then if they wanted to, they could also pick up water or food or a tarp that were in heavy crates. So by picking them up, it would slow them down because they're carrying more heavy items to the finish line. But whenever they crossed the finish line, they would win. And this was the beginning of...
I like that.
It was a very elegant, very simple, you have to make a choice. What do you choose? Do you want to cross the finish line?
Mm-hmm.
You want to cross it first, or you want to cross it with more stuff? And this was the beginning of the Oolong tribe's self-destruction.
They got greedy?
They did get greedy. And they stopped and argued with each other along the way while the Koror tribe made the decision, flint and nothing else. They made the simplest decision, and the other tribe, they couldn't agree. They didn't communicate with each other well. They got bogged down, and they lost that challenge. So it was a great illustration of... you make the wrong choice, and you know, for that began the dominoes that decimated the Oolong tribe.
Yeah, they didn't choose wisely.
They did not choose wisely. They did not pick the cup of a carpenter.
Yeah,
and the sort of, I think, fun afternote to that is that all of the items, including the flint, were weighed down heavily, and the Koror tribe, while paddling back to their camp, their boat capsized, and their flint sank to the bottom of the ocean. So that was the fun. Yeah, they made the right choice and still suffered. That's Survivor for you.
Yeah,
nobody gets an easy pass.
Okay.
Here's a rarity that you might know a little something about.
All right.
I thought that the I believe it was the second episode of Survivor of the Amazon,
mm-hmm.
the Memory Shack Challenge.
Yes.
You had 2 minutes to explore a small village, remember as much as you could, and then Jeff asked you questions about it. And I thought that was a little rare because it was like they built a set, almost like a theatrical set. I mean, looking back on it now, and there have been a couple challenges like that. In China, there was one where they were running through a house looking for puzzle boards, or even all the way back to the Survivor Witch Project from season one, where they gave them video cameras.
Yes.
But that it's almost like a whodunit crime scene investigation.
Yeah. yes, yes.
So, Rob, since you were there, what do you think it would have sounded like if Giles were hosting that challenge?
I think he would have, well... You know, he talks about like, what it looks like. I'm trying to think of anybody who has a good name from Survivor the Amazon to say like Giles.
Can
like,
you say Janet?
Janet. Like it needs like a, he would probably be good for Roger. You know, he'd have a couple of good ones, but there's not a ton. I'm trying to think of
the best Giles name is Lindsay, straight up.
Yeah. Lindsay has quit this challenge. Mateo.
And you got to square off against Dina in two rounds on that, and you performed well.
Yes, you know, for whatever reason, you know, I remembered the things that I was supposed to be remembering. You know, but I find as a viewer, though, I feel like the challenges where there's a quiz on stuff, like I don't particularly love those challenges.
Yes.
Especially trivia about the bush or about the like I find like that and that
you
was
don't
more
like trivia
so
about the bush.
yes in the earlier seasons I feel like there was a lot of this like which snake is most likely to kill you.
I agree. Q&A stuff doesn't always have a huge play along at home factor. I mean, the things we talked about, you know, any challenge can succeed or fail based on what happens in it. But I agree, the Q&A where they write their answers on a notepad, they're not the most dynamic.
Mm-hmm. Some of the worst stuff is even like in Survivor Australia, they do a team challenge where it's trivia and you basically take one step forward. And I guess it must have been so boring. They cut in the edit Jeff answering questions and you just see like it's like a montage. It's like, okay, Mitch, you said B. Nick, you said D. It's D.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, okay.
Yeah. Just a very nitty gritty. Yeah.
Yes. We're just seeing people answer questions. You said true. It was true.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's stuff I feel like I'm glad they've moved away from that sort of thing.
Yes. No one's really wild about that stuff anymore. Mm-hmm. You know, in most instances. I mean, you know, if there's any saving grace, I think the multi-response cubes are a cute prop. I like seeing those. You know, with the A, B, C, D, true and false on them. But we're sort of well rid of those.
Yeah.
Should I read you a couple more rarities?
Yes.
Swiss cheese, please, from the Token Cheens. This was, I thought, a really good physical and mental integration one. There were puzzle boards with holes in them, like big pieces of Swiss cheese. And when they were lined up correctly, you could see through the holes all the way from one end of the course down to the other. And it ended with a letter scramble, but what was a little, I mean, you had to kind of be paying close attention, went by pretty quickly. But they gave you all the consonants you needed to solve the puzzle. But in order to figure out which vowels, you had to be able to see through the holes, and you could then see vowels on posts at the end of the challenge course. So take all the consonants that we gave you, take the vowels that you spotted through the holes, and rearrange them to spell out a phrase.
Whoa.
It was a dandy little challenge. You know, if that one ever came back, I'd be happy to see it again. But if for no other reason, it might not come back for safety reasons, because there was a point where Taj and Sierra were carrying a puzzle board, and Taj put her head through one of the Swiss cheese holes, and Jeff, during the challenge, goes, "Taj, you'll break your neck." Like, you know, were she to fall and trip, you know, it would probably not be... So maybe that was a... They might not have anticipated that the players would stick their heads through the holes while running with them. Yeah, that's not common sense. And when rewatching that...
By the way, if a contestant died on a challenge that you came up with the idea for, would you feel bad or would you say, hey, you know, that's out of my hands after I come up with it?
My first response is, who is the contestant? No, I would feel terrible no matter what.
Okay,
yeah.
Good. Right answer.
Oof. No, that would be very bad. I mean, look, you know, it was scary when Russell Swan, blacked out during his challenge.
But that had nothing to do with the challenge.
More to do with the conditions.
Right.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like, you know, Courtney Moon, you know, felt really bad mm-hmm. about that. I you know, didn't have a hand in that, or no pun intended. She broke an arm. But from what I saw, again, as a viewer, it seemed like the instructions were really clear. Here's how to jump off the platform and fall in the net. Mm-hmm. And I saw a number of people not follow those directions, Courtney Moon among them.
Yeah.
So, you know, no disrespect to Courtney. I'm sure in the moment it's difficult to perform. But that was a very too bad. It was too bad all around.
Yes.
And what I was going to say about Swiss cheese, please. In rewatching some of these challenges, I determined something that I'm going to keep an eye out for in the future, what I call the hapless red team. I saw a lot of hapless teams wearing red. Now, maybe in the history of Survivor, there have been an equal number of hapless teams of all colors. But I saw a lot of red teams failing, including the red team that failed in Swiss cheese, please, was... it was Coach Steven, Taj, and Sierra. Frankly, I think that's a pretty strong team, but they got stomped by... JT, Tyson, Deb, and Aaron.
Can we get maybe one of the listeners to work on this as a research project? I want the win-loss ratio of tribes pre-merge by buff color.
And
let's get somebody on that.
Can we also include post-merge reward challenges where they're divided into groups? Because they sometimes wear red also.
Okay.
There's going to be outliers. Shapiro was a red tribe. They were very strong.
Yes.
And only
lost one immunity before the merge, believe it or not.
I believe it.
Yes.
But Fong in Gabon was a red tribe. Very hapless. So, the hapless red team. I'm wondering if that's a thing or if that's just a perception bias.
Yeah.
All right, I'll read you a couple more rarities.
Go for it.
Okay, Snare the Drum. This was in Philippines. This was a tricky one. This is one that Abby Maria struggled to understand the rules of the game. Players ran between three stations trying to flip their drum so their tribe color was up, and flip the opponent's drum so the black side was showing. And the first team to get all three of their drums tribe color up at the same time won the challenge. It was an endurance game, and it was a physical game, but not a contact game. Thought it had a little nifty mechanism, and reminded me of another game with a hapless red team. This was a drum challenge from China. Again, lots of good stuff in China. This was a game where, let me try to paint a picture with words. You have a drum around your neck on a ribbon, and you're in a team of four, and you're bouncing a ball on the drum. Boom, 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 keeping it in the air. You've got to make your way down a course, and there's some obstacles you can't step over or under. You're going to have to pass the ball to one of your teammates' drums. Does this ring a bell at all?
Yes.
It was great to watch it play out. And when I say hapless red team, this was a physical challenge with James on the team, and James's team lost. I mean, James is an indomitable physical player. Mm-hmm. Any physical game, you want James on your team. But I guess there was a certain amount of finesse involved because the hapless red team of James, Denise, PG, and Todd lost to Eric, Amanda, Frosty, and Courtney. Courtney, who was picked last in the schoolyard pick and was part of the winning team defeating the hapless red team.
It's like a hacky sack thing. I could see Frosty being good at that.
Yes, I thought that was one of the few. When we read Frosty's pregame bio saying that he was a parkour guy, I was like, oh, this is going to be great. I didn't feel like there were a ton of challenges that showed off Frosty's parkour acumen.
Yeah.
But the drum game definitely did.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then just this one's a real oddball. The kitty litter game from Nicaragua. This is a game where the players had a peculiar shaped like bum bag on their like a square bin that was sticking out over their booty. And you had to dig in the sand with a paddle to get rope rings that you then tossed in the air over your back and caught them in the booty box behind. It was just such a it was almost Double Dare-esque, you know?
Yes.
It was a peculiar gizmo.
Did Jill win this challenge?
Dr. Jill. There were two winners. It was a tribal game with individual immunity because they both went to tribal council. Jill won for her team. Do you remember who won for the other team?
No.
It was Holly Hoffman.
Holly Hoffman.
So, you know, I think that's great when an oddball challenge can result in victory for players like Holly and Jill, who on the surface, not necessarily considered to be challenge beasts, but for kitty litter, they're going to go to nationals. And then the two of them faced off against each other in the final showdown throwdown, where it was just a straight up ring toss.
Yeah.
Using the rope rings for the feast.
Okay.
all right. I got two more rarities for you. This was, and they're both from Gabon. Some highs and lows challenges in Gabon. There was one, I don't know what it's actually called, actually, this one, but I'm calling it Fruit Bat. They tried to throw... Fruit Bat.
Okay.
Yeah, not to be confused with Dizzy Bat. That was Susie Smith.
Yes.
Finalist and three-vote receiver But this was the game where they had to throw fruit through these high gates, and they were being defended by a player from the opposite team who had a bat who could smack the fruit out of the air. And the more fruit you got through the basket, whoever the basket that weighed more in 5 minutes was the winner. So you've got, you know, Ace holding a bat and smacking pineapples out of the air. It's like a frolic. It's like a food fight. Like, who doesn't want to watch fruit bat?
It's like a challenge crossed with a Gallagher concert.
Yes, something for everyone. Yes. Yeah, I don't think Jeff Probst put on a poncho, but that would have been good. And then another one with Ace in Gabon. And this is my last from the rarity stack. There was a game where they rolled large wicker baskets down a hill. There was a blindfolded defender from each team holding a shield who was trying to stop the ball from going into different goals worth various amounts of points. And they had a sighted caller up at the top of the hill who would say, move left, move right. Ace was the defender for the hapless red team, Fong, and Sugar was the caller. At least in name. I don't believe she spoke to Ace. I rewatched this challenge. Cowboy Rick spoke more in his whole season than Sugar spoke to Ace during this challenge.
Wow.
So much so, in the final game-deciding round, Randy Bailey, who is the caller for the other tribe, goes, Ace, freeze! And Ace was so desperate for anyone to give him guidance that he stopped and allowed the ball from the other team to roll past
him. That's funny.
Randy Bailey moment. Friend of the podcast, Randy Bailey. That was a great moment for him.
That's very funny. All right, so those are oddities. Those are
some rarities, some seldom seen. And then...
what's this next category?
So this is instances, and this is a good transition. This is outsmarting or quote-unquote cheating at a challenge.
Okay.
And it seems to me that if a player is doing something that Jeff didn't say they couldn't do, it's not cheating. That's why I say cheating in quotes.
This is the Kobayashi Maru?
I thought, now, I'm not up on my Star Trek knowledge. I thought Kobayashi Maru was the test that no one could pass.
Oh, unless you cheat and beat the system.
Yeah, it seemed, the other thing I understand is that for a test that no one could pass, I believe it gets passed kind of a lot. Like, I think there's several instances of people passing the unpassable
test. Well, if you hack the system,
that was not, Randy didn't cheat in that challenge, by any stretch of the imagination. He outsmarted it, and I think we all appreciate a player who outsmarts a challenge.
Or outsmarted Ace.
He certainly outsmarted Ace, yeah. It didn't seem to be very difficult.
Yeah.
In that instance, at least. A great example of outsmarting a challenge was Parvati in Fans vs. Favorites. They repeated a challenge. Now, since Fans vs. Favorites was a season with a lot of all-star players, there were a lot of all-star challenges, including one that Parvati did on Cook Island. So it was their second time doing the same challenge, and I think probably the experience of that maybe helped come up with a strategy. They had to transport players using tall posts. So you had to step off of one. Your whole tribe is in the water supporting this post, and there's a small platform at the top. And so you step onto it, and they've got two of these. Am I painting a word picture? Your whole tribe is in the water, and there's a post that is like 8 feet high. You're up on an 8-foot high platform. You have to step off of the platform onto the post.
Okay.
Then your tribe has a second post, and so they kind of leapfrog these posts, and they turn them into stepping stones.
Got it.
But Parvati's tribe, the favorites, they discarded their second post, and they just used it like they were carrying her on a tray, a very tall, very narrow tray. And it worked. It was not how the challenge was intended to be solved, but they did it.
Yeah.
Another one that I love, Eric Reichenbach has a great track record for outsmarting the challenges. In the first challenge of that season, Fans versus Favorites, the fans and the favorites are digging for puzzle piece wagon wheels in side-by-side courses, but Eric is throwing sand from his course into the favorite side and into their faces to slow them down, which seems like a great way to turn a non-combat challenge into a combat challenge. Similarly, in the Rice Riot game, which is sort of the melee in the water where they're both trying to get bags of rice into their end zone, Eric is dragging Amanda down the course. He beans her on the head with the heavy rice bag. It seems like it's all in fair, you know, dirty play can be fair play in Survivor. But I thought that was a good one. Or Jonathan Penner, who ran in Philippines, ran to a sandy course, dug up all four bags and left them on the top, then carried his bag back to the start line. So then when his three tribe mates arrived at the sand pit, their bags were already dug up for them.
There you go. Penner.
Penner, he was
I'm thinking
smart...
outside of the box.
The sandbox?
Yes.
You thinking outside of the sandbox, Penner?
Yes.
I was hoping Penner's voice would come up. I think I've already pimped you for everything that I wanted to pimp you for. And other instances of outsmarting the challenge, when you have to get the most mud into the bucket.
Yes.
We saw this recently. I thought that Ozzy kind of broke this challenge because the last time he played it, he used the back of his neck as a shelf. He was carrying like volleyball-sized mounds of mud on the back of his neck to the start line. I thought, oh, they can't do that game again. People are just going to use the old Ozzy back of the neck shelf technique. And no one did in this most recent season. And then the last instance I have of, this isn't quite outsmarting the challenge, but challenge beast Dara the Mortician from Pearl Islands was able to sort of win a game a little bit faster than she otherwise might have because her wrists were so narrow, she could reach into the chute of coconut juice and pull her key out before her competitors were.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that was fair.
That was like a thing where they had to, like, the ball had to come up a certain distance and she was able to just stick her arm down into the tube and pull the thing out.
That's right.
She was on a little bit of an immunity run there.
She was on a little bit of an immunity run. Yeah, not loaded with charisma, Dara the Mortician.
Yeah.
But she did have a couple immunity wins to her name, and hats off. Anybody who wins an individual immunity, I have an enormous amount of respect for.
Yes.
So those would be outsmarting.
Present company included?
Present company. Rob, all of us super fans who were watching the show, you were kind of, I feel like, the first Avatar super fan who we at home felt like, Rob's just like us. And seeing that necklace around
Not
your
Mitchell?
Neck, I didn't get that vibe from Mitchell. My understanding was that he was a super fan, but he wasn't someone we could pin all of our hopes and dreams to, like a Rob Sesternino.
Yes.
But the smile on your face when you won individual immunity.
I was pumped up.
I felt the same thing when Todd won and for all of Cochran's wins. You know, the fans who were like, Dawn Meehan, like big fans winning immunity is so vindicating.
Yeah.
It's a fine thing to behold.
Yeah, Spencer this season was fun.
Oh my gosh, yes.
Yes, very fun.
But Rob, what if you're not great at outsmarting the challenges? What if you're not an outthinker? Let's talk for a second about combat challenges in general. You know, like I said, I'm not really a sports guy. Combat challenges, some of them are great, some of them, you know, I'm not wild about. Straight up brute force games, I think, have real limitations. A tug of war game. There was a tug of war in Guatemala where they all just kind of got stuck in the mud.
Yeah.
And we saw that happen again in Philippines. The contestants threw in the towel rather than play out the tug of war game. But I think certain combat challenges can be terrific. They've certainly come a long way. Oh, not to put you on the spot. If you had to name the first challenge in Survivor with a combat component, what would you say?
I would say it would be in Survivor Thailand in the famous attack zone with Clay and Rob with two Bs, the immortal Rob with two Bs.
Ring the bell. That is the correct answer. That is the first with the combat zone where half of the young tribe, maybe not half, three of the players got themselves thrown out of the challenge. So before Shannon, before Ben.
There was Rob with two Bs.
Rob with two Bs and Stephanie and I think NYPD cop Ken.
If
Wikipedia is to be believed, none of these young people could obey the rules of the attack zone. So how did we improve on that?
Maybe calling it the attack zone was probably a bad move. Maybe just call it rough housing zone, or just
the horseplay,
the human contact zone. Yeah, I think that's sort of like when you name it the attack zone, I think it becomes more violent.
That proved to be the case. Definitely choking Clay was not a great moment for Rob. And then mocking him afterwards, like, you remember the Rob was like, Clay sounded like this when I choked him. Oh!
Yes. Which he then made the same noise when he got stung by the stingray.
I got stung by a stingray. Yes. I'd forgotten about that.
That was Survivor Karma.
That was Survivor Karma, yes. No, his luxury skateboard could not protect him from the stingray sting. And he didn't have Kathy Vabrick O'Brien there.
No.
So I think other examples of better combat challenges that are actually, if anything, you know, more freeform than the challenge that just has the attack zone, but have that sort of elegance. Kicking and screaming, great physical challenge, I feel like. You're hanging onto a post and players from the other tribe are trying to drag you across the finish line. That has the simplicity of like...
When did they do that?
That premiered in Cook Islands.
Yeah.
And we saw it played recently in Cagayan.
Yes.
Tasha put in a very strong performance. They could not get her off of that post.
Oh, okay. Yeah. You're holding onto the post. And they're trying to pull you off.
And you've got Spencer and Jeremy trying to pull Cliff Robinson off a post. And he's just laughing. I don't think Spencer and Jeremy could have gotten Cliff Robinson across the finish line if Cliff had been sleeping.
Yeah.
I think just his mass was greater.
Yeah.
I think that's, and Rice Riot, which I mentioned before, they played that in Fans versus Favorites. There are 5 rice bags in the game. Get 3 of them into your end zone. And other than that, it was just a melee. We saw, you know, James indomitable physical presence, but then you also had Yao Man had some great heroic moments in the game because Yao Man take your eye off of him for a minute and he's stealing a rice bag from your end zone and running it back to his.
Yeah.
Like don't discount Yao Man.
I feel like they have a lot of variations on that one. I feel like in the second Fans versus Favorites, I think they did that too. Is that where Malcolm's pants came off? I feel like that was one of the.
You may be right. That might have been a basketball version of that game.
Yeah.
Battle Dig, I think, is another classic physical game. They played that. There was the first challenge of Heroes versus Villains, but it was originally in Panama, in Exile Island. Mm-hmm. There is a sandbag buried here, first person to get it back to their mat, or just touch your mat and touch the sandbag at the same time, you win. There was a memorable moment in the first outing for that game where Ruth Marie really thought that she was going to win. She's running towards her mat with the sandbag, and Bob Dog just kind of reaches out, grabs her by her shirt, and pulls her over to his mat without even trying very hard. Because Bob Dog versus Ruth Marie, not a very fair physical matchup, not evenly matched.
No. A lot of memorable moments in the Heroes versus Villains iteration of that.
Yeah.
That was epic.
Coach owning Colby.
Yes.
That was, and that was the challenge where Sugar Kuiper gave the topless double bird to Sandra Diaz Twine.
Yeah, they're like, oh, we'll take her top off.
Yeah.
I don't know. People did not know Sugar very well if they thought that no top is going to slow her down.
I just thought, you know, the topless double bird, not the classiest move in the world.
Yeah.
But hey, she scored the point, and give her credit for that.
Stephanie got hurt, too, in that challenge.
And I think it was Courtney who was urging the villains to dislocate Stephanie's shoulder again.
Yeah.
Yeah, during that challenge. Yeah, that was, they had just hit the beach.
Yeah.
Within minutes of the game beginning, they played Battle Dig against each other, and all the contestants brought it.
I was very relieved that they never did one of those two challenges in my seasons of Survivor.
You didn't have to play like a full melee-style combat.
I never had to wrestle anybody.
That's right.
Yes.
And you know, some of the combat challenges are great indirect. Like, they're not competing directly against each other. Gabon, like I said, some highs and lows in Gabon. They played a version of Keep Away with a breakable ball. You had 3 members of the red team passing a ball among each other, and 1 member of the yellow team trying to get the ball to hit the ground. When the ball hit the ground, it would break open and there was rice inside. I had completely forgotten about this challenge until I was prepping for today. It's a fun game. Again,
it's like a pinata.
It was like a pinata. Sugar kind of hapless in that game, just kind of standing and watching the ball fly all around her, sort of powerless to stop it.
Mm-hmm.
In Philippines, another game about smashing things, there was a game where the end mechanism involved, you had ceramic vases with rice in them, and you had to swing a heavy weight on a pendulum to try to smash them. That was another instance of the Mat Singh tribe losing by the smallest of margins. You know, they'd been performing very well. Malcolm did a great job swinging that thing, trying to smash those vases, but the other two tribes just finished faster, always.
Yeah.
Build It Up, Break It Down first appeared in Palau. That was you're creating an obstacle for the other tribe, trying to make it impassable, and then they're going to try to smash through the boards and the ropes and untie their flag and raise their flag.
Is that on Fans versus Favorites? Is that where Penner got hurt?
I think you're thinking of the cat and mouse game. That was the one where Penner got a puncture wound and Amy got a fat lip and Chet was dragging. Joel was dragging Chet.
This is like you have to, like, they have to get through a tunnel. I think I'm thinking in my head that after he had been hurt, I think that then they did that challenge.
You know, I believe if Penner were here, he could tell us, but I think Penner played that game in the Philippines and he put himself into tie knots because. You know what? My memory is a jumble. Penner, I'm sure
somebody will tell us.
Yes.
Who knows? Who knows?
That's why I'm not here to give you a fact-checked visit through the museum.
Yes.
More like an exploratory. Another room we can look at in the museum is a challenge that's been replayed several times. The step on a tile until you can't anymore game. Right?
The big
strategy game, yeah. You know, Danny Boatwright memorably won the advantage to that challenge in the auction in Guatemala, and that sort of started a chain reaction that led to her winning because she was down in the numbers and the majority kind of turned on each other instead.
Yeah.
And if memory serves, Corinne bought that same advantage in the second Fans versus Favorites, but failed to win the game.
Hmm. That doesn't sound right to me.
No, Corinne did buy an advantage in an auction to a challenge that she didn't
win. I would think it would be in Gabon, if anything. Well, because I don't think she made it far enough in fan versus.
Right,
she wasn't even on the jury, so I don't think...
Yeah, you're right about that. But one thing that I had forgotten until I did a little bit more peeking into the annals of the past is that this challenge had its debut in Borneo.
Yes.
And Rudy
won it. Yes.
And so I don't know, because this was long before I joined the show, but it's possible that if Rudy had not won that challenge, that might have been the last mental or strategic challenge we ever saw in Survivor, because it was like, hey, the 72-year-old guy can win. You know, it's like, it's fair for everybody. Anybody can win. You know, now, Rudy did have everybody sitting on the bench telling him what moves to make, which I think they would probably not do any longer.
Yeah.
But it was a nice thing to see Rudy win.
Yeah. You know, I have seen that episode recently where Rudy was in that, and I think that part of it was that was when Jenna Lewis got voted off, and I think there was a lot of like all of the people from Tagi saying, okay, as long as Jenna Lewis doesn't win, and so they were sort of like coming after her, and so it's sort of like they ended up like I don't think it was that Rudy was such a great strategist. I think that nobody was just bothering him, and yes, he sort of ended up being on his own.
You gotta root for Rudy.
You know, it's also interesting in the first season of Survivor, there's really no puzzles to speak of.
The challenges in the first season of Survivor are primitive,
yeah,
but in a wonderful way.
Yeah.
That Survivor Witch Project challenge with Rudy looking at the video camera going,
I don't know.
You know, the start and finish line for that game is a log. They all have their foot on a log, and Jeff goes, Survivor is ready, go! And Kelly comes back, and Jeff's like, okay, did you get everything on your camera? All right, I'll rewatch
it. Let me watch it, yeah.
Or like walking out into chest deep water to cut the rope to make the perch smaller. Like,
yes.
He wouldn't do that today.
No, he would have a guy. He would have a guy, or there would be a button. Or
you'd pull a lever.
Yes.
Yeah.
There's a lot of, in the early seasons of Survivor, Jeff Probst like swimming out in his clothes.
Yes.
And, you know, in just getting, like, you would never see Jeff Probst get completely like immersed in water now at this point.
The challenges have come a long way since season one. It's really interesting to go back and watch those.
Yes.
Let's talk for a second about contested calls. There's a few in the history of Survivor. One that I remember, like, when watching the show in its first time around, that was, I don't know why this stuck out in my memory, but your first round draft pick, Kathy Vavrick O'Brien,
yes,
contested a call in Survivor Marquesas. The challenge was awarded to the Rotu tribe, but then Kathy pointed out correctly that their outrigger was not close enough to, the, you know, it was sort of a technicality,
yeah,
but she was right. And the Jeff overturned the decision and awarded the reward to Mar-Amu.
Yeah.
And then kind of two infamous instances of overturned or contested calls was the spelling game in Pearl Islands.
Yes.
Where Burton was announced the winner. And here's me screaming at the TV, because as the camera pans across Burton Station, you know, I'm a proofreader. I'm, you know, he spelled liaison wrong, and you could even see it on camera. Then they brought everybody back, and they had to kind of on the fly say, okay, here are the new rules. Burton's out. Here's what we're going to do with the remaining three.
Did Dara catch that, or she ultimately won it, and they caught it? They said, okay, we got to go to the booth.
Everybody left the challenge station, and they played the music, and it looked like it was about to go to commercial. And then Jeff goes, hey, everybody, come on back.
Yeah.
Like, whoa. And they all come back, and Jeff goes, Burton, it has been drawn to my attention. So we, the viewer, don't know who made that call.
Yeah.
But it was before they ended the challenge officially.
Should there be like a booth review on Survivor? Like, would that defeat the purpose? Like in the show, of course, Jeff Probst is the umpire.
Yes.
But if Major League Baseball can take a game that's, you know, 150 years of tradition of the umpire is always right, they're like, you know what? We're going to go to the booth on Big Brother this season. There was a thing. Okay, we're going to check the tape, and when we come back, we're going to look at this. If there's ever a close finish, do you think that we'll ever get to the point on Survivor is like, all right, I'm going to go and we're going to go and review the footage on this and sort of like see a booth review on a close finish, or will it just always be Jeff makes the call and that's it? Like, are they interested in getting the call right, or is it whatever is called in the moment?
I would, if they ever did that, I would be fine with it.
Yeah.
I think it would be very interesting, and they would, I'm sure they would promote it as an unprecedented tonight.
The closest finish ever.
There have been so many closest finishes ever
that
they've promoted in promos on CBS. I think that we won't see it happen, and here's why. Because I think that unlike some of those other, unlike baseball and Big Brother, Survivor maintains, does a pretty good job of maintaining the fiction of the marooning.
Yes.
You don't see challenges that have automated or mechanized components ever. There's exceptions. There was a Survivor internet cafe in the Outback.
Yes.
But the, you know, by
with
and
a
large,
giant computer hooked up to a satellite dish.
Yeah. And coffee and pastries.
Yeah. And the first appearance of Katie Collins.
Katie Collins.
Yes. Tina's daughter.
Oh, she appeared. Oh my gosh.
Yes.
Of course. Yes.
Yes.
I just remember, you know, the peas and carrots and the high baby. Yes, that's yes, all I yes, need. Yes, yeah. Yes. This is, it was great emotional fodder. But, you know, by many times the challenges, I mean, my gosh, we haven't even talked about the art department and what a great job they do of making these challenges in many instances look like, for instance, in Palau, like they've been overgrown by the jungle for 50 years. You know, mm-hmm. like there's these great builds and great attention to detail. So I think for them to say, we're going to review, and it, like, you never see the cameras mm-hmm. in the challenges or around camp. Survivor as a show, it kind of has this guiding principle that we're really maintaining the fiction of the marooning.
Yeah.
There's a certain amount of suspension of disbelief required. But I think for them to say, we're going to review the tape and openly acknowledge the filming, doesn't seem consonant with the current guiding principles
yeah.
of the show.
Okay. Yeah, I wonder what the, like, it would be hard for me to imagine that they would go and show Jeff like looking under the hood of like looking at a TV. But I wonder if, you know, they would review it like and then tell Jeff we actually made the wrong call, and then how they would like if Jeff would could even just say, actually we looked at this and this team wins, the red team.
That kind of thing may have happened and we yeah. don't even know about it. I remember in Heroes versus Villains, when they played the sort of a classic challenge, When It Rains, It Pours, you've got one arm up above your head.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, the one that Sheehan won and
of course.
And Teresa in Africa, which you rock, paper, scissors with Clarence Brown.
Black.
Clarence Black?
Yes.
Sorry about that. I must have been thinking of someone else.
Nick Brown.
Nick Brown.
Clarence Black. Yes.
Yeah, well, those names don't get bandied around much.
Yes.
They didn't make the draft.
Yes.
It was shown as the final showdown between Parvati and Rupert when they played that in Fans versus Favorites. But in an interview after, Colby said that something like Colby was in there in the mix and we didn't see it. They edited around it because it didn't serve the story. I could be making all of this up, but yeah. I think there's probably things that happen as far as contested calls and close calls that we never even know, because as with any game show you go on, from Survivor to Win Ben Stein's Money,
yeah.
the producer's word is final.
Is it possible they CGI'd Colby out of a lot of Heroes versus Villains?
His image would be better today
yes.
if they'd removed him from more of the season, because what we did see was not to his credit.
Man. Okay.
Yeah. So some contested calls. I know, I want to read some bests and worsts, but just a couple more of the bottom floor rooms of our Survivor Challenge Museum. So this is the question for discussion. What is your opinion of staged immunity challenges?
When you say a staged immunity challenge, what do you mean?
9 people are going to begin. The first 6 through will make it to the next stage. And then the first 4 through will make it to the next stage, and so on.
Yeah, I don't have a feeling one way or the other on it. I feel like it depends on what the challenge is.
It depends on what the challenge is. This is just an oddball one to rewatch, but the final 9 immunity from Exile Island.
Okay.
And this is this is to avoid the loser of this voted out first member of the jury. So we're still a ways off from the finals. You know, there's 9 people left in the game. It was a huge build. It was a massive challenge, and it was staged. It was, first you had to dig yourself under the fence post, that kind of classic mm-hmm. physical component to it. That's where Otis got stuck. He was one of the first under the fence, and he was there when the round was over.
Yes.
It was like Rabbit and Winnie the Pooh. He couldn't make it through.
Leaf, also, another person got stuck.
Ah, I'd forgotten about Leaf altogether. Although, along with Penner and Russell Hance, a fedora-wearing survivor.
Yes, yes, fedorable.
But I don't think Penner could fit into the box that the bocce game came in, like
no.
the way that Leaf could. And then they had to, there was a huge timber tunnel, like it was a parallel to the ground, and then it went up and they climbed over. There was a Sudoku game with colored stones, and they had to go over two sandhills and splash through stuff. And the three, it was Austin, Sally, and Terry, the last three players from the original Lamina. And Austin had just come back from two rough days on Exile Island where he'd been rained on the whole time and hanging out with Double D. And
whoa.
What happened there stays on Exile Island.
Yes.
And Terry Dietz does a somersault onto the finish mat to win that challenge. That's a fun one. To me, the problem with the staged immunities is this. If you've got someone who has to win immunity, like Troyzan,
right.
It's make or break.
They're out.
And they don't make it past the first stage, there's a bit of anti-climax.
Yeah.
Why do we care? Yeah. So best case scenario, everybody can play the whole challenge.
Okay.
But a lot of great games from the past have been staged. And then last, before I kind of go into some best and worst and whatnot, just a couple words on a couple players. Rob, I have a slight bone to pick with you.
Go for it.
Because you'd been sort of disparaging Cerise's performance in challenges, sort of indirectly saying, well, Cerise, not necessarily someone you want in your tribe when it comes to challenges. She might not survive, the early game in a future season. I disagree. I think in the physical games, like your Rice Ride or whatever, Cerise's a linebacker. She goes all out.
Yeah.
Plus, many of the challenges, physical or not, have a puzzle component.
Yeah.
And Ceree is definitely someone you want on your tribe as a puzzle maker.
Okay.
So that I just wanted to sort of correct.
She's strong, yes. Good at the puzzles.
Yes.
Not somebody you want in the relay race.
In a foot race? No.
No.
Not an asset.
No.
Yeah. And also, this was kind of more relevant before he got a lot of love in the underrated players draft, but Rafe is someone who I think deserves a lot of credit as a challenge performer.
Yes.
I think he was great in Guatemala. And also, Kelly Wigglesworth, and I only bring that up, she's gotten some love recently.
Mm-hmm.
When Kelly wins the Survivor Witch Project, which as you can probably tell, I rewatched recently, when Jeff awards her immunity, he calls her by her last name, which I'd forgotten.
Oh.
He goes, here you go, Wigglesworth. Guess you can keep this.
Yeah.
I would love for Kelly to come back and compete again as a challenge dominator.
Yes. I don't know if she ever would.
You don't think so?
I don't know what she's doing. I don't even know if I saw her at the 10-year reunion party and I talked with her. I was actually became like a little bit friendly with her when I first moved to LA, and I would see her from time to time, but she was like living in Mexico, and they sort of like, I think they made a big deal out of like putting the final four together at that party, and she was like, hey, they brought me here, whatever. They flew me out here, I came. But I think that she was like not super excited to be at the Survivor 10-year party. Well, only came because they wanted to bring this final four together for the first time.
They went to a lot of trouble, yeah. It seems like there's a whole category of Survivor players who Survivor was one adventure in a life of adventures for them. Like maybe Scout or Gabriel Cade, people who aren't really like looking back.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, speaking of looking back, there's lots of looking back that you can do when you try out Hulu Plus. And I just want to take a moment and thank our sponsor for this episode. Now, I know a lot of people have tried out Hulu on their computer, but Hulu Plus is much more, Miles.
So much more.
Because with Hulu Plus, you get to watch shows on your schedule. I know you're busy.
Being a game designer is a full-time job.
Yeah, it's a very busy job. Hard to get a hold of all of your favorite shows. Hulu Plus has current seasons of your favorite shows like The Daily Show, Saturday Night Live, and the just finished 24 Live Another Day. Do you watch the 24? Oh, you'll want to watch that finale. Plus, you can watch every episode of shows like South Park, Community, and you can watch a bunch of the challenges that we just talked about with the back catalog of Survivor. They've got season 1 and then 12 through 26 on Hulu Plus. Hulu Plus works on your computer, smart TV, Roku, Apple TV, Xbox, pretty much any streaming device you already own. You can even watch on your phone, tablet, or on the train, at work, at the dentist, or in the bathroom. Maybe they could Jeff Probst has his iPad ready to go as he's watching the tape reviews. Maybe he could be watching Hulu Plus as well.
From the Survivor outhouse.
Yes. You could be blocking off a whole day to be binge watching TV shows. With Hulu Plus, you're in total control to stream these and thousands more for as much as you want, whenever you want, for only $7.99 a month. Get your shows anytime, anywhere. But right now, for the listeners of Rob as a Podcast, you can get a 2-week free trial when you go to HuluPlus.com/Rob. That's a whole extra week for free. So make sure you use HuluPlus.com/Rob so you get an extended free trial and so they know that we sent you. It helps support the podcast and gives you a better deal. One more time, the extended free trial is HuluPlus.com/Rob. And nothing more fun than, going nowhere and watching a bunch of TV or making the traffic go by. Fantastic.
Yeah, thanks, Hulu Plus. Rewatching these old seasons of Survivor and episodes.
Is that what you've used?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. It's been invaluable in preparing for today and a real treat. I mean, I love Survivor. It's always, the long, slow slog in between seasons. Your podcast helps tide us over. But going back and rewatching, finding that there are whole contestants that I forgot existed.
Yeah.
Did you know that there was someone in the Token Sheens named Jackie?
No. No, I did not.
Or maybe it wasn't. There was a survivor named Jackie. Could have knocked me over with a feather.
Yeah. Was it a man or a woman?
A woman.
Oh.
Yeah. The fact checkers will prove me wrong in that. But she didn't. I just watched her again recently and she still didn't stick.
Was
out
it
in my
Jackie
memory.
Or Jackie?
There was a C in there. There was a Q.
Oh.
There was no extra I because Burton didn't spell it.
Okay. Fantastic. Good job. All right. So tell us about it. You have best and worst
and
now?
This is all subject to, your mileage may vary, but these are challenges that I thought were particularly elevated or that kind of fell flat. We're going to sort of dwell on the negative. And again, really, as I say, I think that every challenge has positive attributes. Many of these are ones that, a challenge that I don't particularly care for, and it's purely a matter of taste. I don't know what it's properly called. I call it the tooth pinata. This is when there's a swinging piece of meat and the survivors go after it with their teeth.
Yes, yes, I can
you
tell
you. Competed in that in the Amazon,
yes,
right?
Yes, we did that in the Amazon and it was not fun. It was probably my least favorite challenge.
I think it's kind of vulgar. Like, I don't care for it.
Yes, it's not particularly fun. On the day that we did it, it was probably, at least 110 degrees. It was, it was brutally hot. This thing was like charred, like on the outside, but like really like raw on the inside. And it's just like, you just had it like, you wanted to be sick every time you would, like, yeah. I had it all over my shirt that I wore. And every time I wore the shirt, you could still smell
for
like
days
the
and weeks
barbecue
later.
On it. And like the flies were more attracted to it after. So it was not fun.
And in a recent repeat, they smeared barbecue sauce on it, which really is just doubling. Like, there's no point to that except just to double down on the grossness factor.
Yeah, it's pretty gross.
The fallout from that challenge played a role in ostracizing Cochran from his tribe the first time around, right? Wasn't he saying that we're all going to get hepatitis from having our mouth in the meat?
Is that what he said?
I know it was.
I remember he said that. I didn't remember the reason why he said that.
It might have been that.
Yeah.
It could have just been a fever dream to me. If we don't see that one come back again, I'll be perfectly happy.
Yeah, that's fine.
When it comes to ignominious challenges, though, there's kind of one that I feel like kind of stands head and shoulders above the rest of, like, I know that everybody put their best foot forward, but the opening challenge of Survivor Gabon, when I say there's highs and lows, episode one, challenge one was running up a hill. That was the challenge.
Yes.
They had to run up a hill.
What was the idea there?
There was a choose individual or tribe component to it. They were kind of trying to recapture the magic of the supply dump from Palau. There was an individual immunity necklace, one for each tribe, at the top of the hill. And there was also provisions for camp, like an extra bag of rice. If you were the first individual to make it to the top, you could claim the necklace for yourself. Same as in the original fans versus favorites.
Right.
But if your first, if your tribe was the first to have the whole tribe make it to the top to the mat, then you got the extra provisions. So the dilemma was supposed to be, do you just think of yourself or do you help your tribe?
Right.
It turned out to be moot because Gabon was, I had forgotten about this as well, Gabon was one of the seasons with a schoolyard pick. And those are kind of a gamble because the producers have proven themselves really good at making evenly matched teams.
Mm-hmm.
When the contestants do it, it doesn't always go that well. Oolong was a contestant chosen team. Fong was a contestant chosen team. This was the tribe of GC.
Yes, yes.
Kenny and Crystal Cox.
Crystal, yeah.
Who, along with Jillian, needed to be aided up the hill. Crystal's defense for why she needed Maddie to carry her up the hill, she said, I was wearing a dress and My shoes probably wear 10 pounds. My shoes probably weigh 10 pounds.
Wow.
Those heavy 10-pound sneakers are why Crystal Cox, the Olympic medalist,
yes,
couldn't run up the hill.
Yes.
So that challenge, and it was a blowout. The whole Coda tribe made it up long before Fong. They couldn't even make it look like it was close. And the other, when I said there were contestants I'd completely forgotten about, there was a young woman named Michelle who played Survivor Gabon.
Mm-hmm.
Completely forgot about her. She was the last one picked out of all the contestants in the schoolyard pick. She was the last one added to Fong. And she was the third player to the top of the hill. She was the best female athlete in the bunch. But nobody liked her, and nobody remembers her, myself included. I won a game show about Survivor trivia, and I have no idea who this
woman
is.
Poor Michelle.
Poor Michelle. Better luck next time.
Yeah.
Another one that is, I think, kind of a so bad it's good challenge.
Ooh.
Is from Survivor Fiji.
Yes.
They played a game of Battleship. This whole thing was so weird. There was a large grid. The contestants were seated with the grid behind them, so they couldn't see it. And they all picked three adjacent squares secretly. And then they would guess coordinates. And Jeff, he had a pretty cool setup. He would pull a knob, and then that square on the grid behind them would burst into flames.
Whoa.
And if all three of your squares had burned up, you were out of the game.
Yeah. They actually did this on King of the Nerds this past season.
How did it play out on King of the Nerds?
I think it was more interesting.
The whole thing is so odd. Like when they lose, when all three of their squares are done, they're sitting on this bench. They then just sit on the ground. Like they move to the ground when they're eliminated. Plus, the first two players, Dreams and Cassandra, Survivor finalists,
yes,
both on their first turn bombed themselves.
They forgot where their pieces were.
Dreams, where do you want your pieces? A1, A2, and A3. All right, what would you like to bomb first?
A1.
Well, Dreams, you put coconuts in your own boat, as the saying goes.
Yes, yes.
So that challenge, you know, the fire mechie was cool, but that one, you know, virtually a fiasco.
Yeah,
hard. No play along at home. Oftentimes the challenges where they're supposed to practice or use some kind of skill or weapon, those very seldom go well. There apparently, and I didn't watch all of these, but apparently there were three of them in China. They threw meteor hammers. They threw ninja stars. I remember that because James tried to huck it like a baseball. And they did an archery challenge, which Denise, the lunch lady, won because people kept hitting her target by mistake. So, you know, the archery challenges.
Yes.
They don't see, or like in Marquesas, they had to stilt fight. And Tammy was the only person who practiced. Tammy Leitner, I'm a huge fan. I follow her on Twitter.
Oh. Does she tweet anything good?
Just about which television news pieces she's going to appear in. She's still a journalist.
Yes.
So it's like, coming up on television in Arizona.
I reached out to her at one point and said, hey, do you want to come on the show? She's like, I really don't watch anything with Survivor. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm a fan. Well, I mean, at the time I had a big crush on Tammy.
Yeah.
But not really
memorable.
She was
good. Yeah.
She practiced with the stilts. And so she was the only one who was on them for more than a second or two.
Yeah.
So she beat Zoe Xanadakis in the kind of anticlimactic final showdown of the stilt fight game.
In the first Survivor, they call it like the first annual Survivor weapons challenge. And the showdown, which is really epic on rewatch, is between Joel and Sue Hawk.
Yeah, they threw spears.
Yes,
and they blew darts.
There's like the first two rounds, which are sort of anticlimactic, but it's like it was such drama of Joel versus Sue Hawk, because Sue Hawk's thing was, oh, you know, I really just want to dog a guy out on national TV. And, you know, it's, you know, and Joel, like, he was practicing and Sue Hawk was practicing, and Joel ultimately ends up winning, and Sue's pretty bummed out because she just wanted to dog a guy out on national TV.
She just wanted to dog a guy. Sue was a fan of the phrase national TV.
Yeah.
Which I guess we didn't want anybody to think that Survivor was some kind of cable access show.
Yes.
You can only see regionally.
Or even worse, some sort of global phenomenon.
But
yeah.
Because that's the thing, like, national TV is kind of like a moot phrase at this point.
Yes, yes.
TV is national.
Yeah.
So that, I think that just goes to show that in that premier weapons challenge, there was drama and it did play out. So anything can go well.
We had one in the Amazon. Well, I don't think it was particularly memorable. It was like Matt versus Alex in the finals. And it was, you know,
I think Rupert, the episode he got voted out was because he lost in a darts game or a shuffleboard game or something. Mm-hmm. You know, again, depending on what's at stake and who's playing, it can be interesting. But by and large, the weapons challenges, many of them kind of fall flat because the contestants aren't very good.
Yeah. The Sue Hawk versus Joel thing was good because there was such stakes of like the, you know, man versus woman.
Yes.
Sue, know, so there was some sort of added stakes on it.
Yeah. Another sort of, these were back-to-back. In many instances, I find the seasons, you know, Thailand, Fiji, Gabon, Nicaragua, seasons that are not great seasons of Survivor. Oftentimes, that's true of the challenges as well. You know, there are some seasons that are really strong challenge-wise. Thailand, back-to-back. In Episode 3, their immunity was a Tangrams puzzle. Not fun to watch. Not a very close contest. And then the following episode, Episode 4 for immunity, they had to sort fish. They had two big bins with four different kinds of fish in them. Not a lot of drama there. That
seems like an amazing race task.
It was like an amazing race task. That's very on point.
I'm trying to think of an amazing race name for the task. In Bucket O' Fish.
You'll have to choose Go Fish or Old Maid.
Yes. In Old Fish, you'll have to sort out buckets of fish into four canisters while a fishmonger will stand over you and see if your team is right.
In Old Maid, you will accompany a spinster to the post office to mail two letters.
But I can do that all day long. All right, is this finalist? This is the best. Are you down to the best
picture?
Yeah, I was
going to say, other challenges that aren't really that great. Oftentimes, the movie tie-ins kind of are a bit of a struggle.
The back-to-back seasons of Gulliver's Travels and Jack and Jill.
The Gulliver's Travels was really most memorable for Dan in the giant chair.
Yes,
that was the best thing to come out of that challenge because. I don't know, if he wanted, he could have stood on that chair, but he played into it, and he had his feet dangling over the end like Lily Tomlin and Edith Ann.
Yes.
And it really, any challenge that's going to be judged subjectively, like the distress call from the air, the first couple of those were okay, but who built a better shelter? As the viewer, I'm like, well, how are you really judging that? So You Think You Can Meki from Fiji was kind of the apotheosis of this. Each tribe had to perform a dance. Mm-hmm. And then some locals told them who was the better dancer.
Very amazing race.
Yeah, really the less said of that.
Yes.
So on to better things, because there have been so many great challenges. This is just a celebration of some of what might be the best, or certainly some special
in
challenges.
In any particular order?
I've got some of my favorites up front.
Okay.
So here is a tribal challenge, Hot Pursuit or the Steeplechase. This is, to call something as elegant as a folk game, a tag on the schoolyard is an example of a folk game.
Yes.
No one invented that. It's just as elemental as the wind or the trees. You're like, why hasn't this been around for hundreds of years?
First done in Survivor Palau?
That is correct.
Yes.
Another losing game for the Oolong tribe.
Yes.
Might have played out differently if Jeff Wilson hadn't rolled his ankle.
Most recently done in Survivor Caramoan.
I'm sure you're right.
Yes, because this was where it was Philip and Corinne famously were feuding over it because
Philip had a different strategy.
Yes.
Oh, I forgot about
Corinne,
this.
Corinne, I hike the Runyon Canyon and down, and Philip was...
the specialist.
Philip was Philipping.
Yeah, he was Philip Buster. He was having his way. That challenge has been played out with some variations. Sometimes instead of having backpacks full of sand, they're holding a heavy snake or something.
Yeah, just in case that people can't picture it in their minds, can you just explain what that is?
In the original game, there's a circular course in the water, and the tribes start on opposite sides of it. You're tethered to your tribe. You can clip out if you need to. You're also carrying a backpack with 20 pounds of sand. The object of the game is to tag the other team. So you're chasing each other round and round in a circle. The other thing about it is they were playing in what started as like knee-deep water, and as the challenge went on, the tide was rising, and walking through the water as it became chest deep was incredibly taxing. So it's a real endurance game. Koror won it because, in Jeff's words, Oolong had nothing left in the tank. So Ian Rosenberger reached out and tagged Ibrahim to end the game. In subsequent versions, like in Cook Islands, you had to bring a member to the ground. So I think Cowboy got dragged to the ground in order to end that challenge. But it's just an endurance game. You circle, you go around and around trying to catch up with the tribe in front of you.
Do you think there's strategy in that? Like, should you just let your four worst people off, the four strongest people just go and just make a beeline for the other tribe?
I'm no athlete, and I haven't competed on Survivor, but that sounds like a very practical strategy. Tom Westman had the strategy. I think actually both tribes did it. Pick up the pace when you're in the shallows. Like, there was part of the course that was in deep water, and part of the course on the opposite side that was in shallow water. They tried to pick up a little bit of ground every time they were in the shallows.
Mm-hmm.
That contributed to the tribe's success. But yeah, I think just getting the people who can't hang out at the beginning.
Yeah, just start with them, and then just, you know, say, okay, survivor's ready, go. Okay, you're out, and let's just, you know, run after them and see if we can catch their slow people while they're still in.
Yeah, it would make it a sort of a more competitive game, and it's an endurance game. It takes a while. Great showing from Stephanie LaGrossa in that game. She was the last woman hanging right there for her tribe. She was there at the end.
And I could come up with this idea and then be one of the four people that check out.
So you'll contribute to your team's success in more ways
than
one. And
they'll say, Rob, oh, that was such a good idea. Thank you for thinking of that so we could go win reward. Oh, enjoy the reward, everybody. This one's on me.
This gratis of Rob.
Yes.
Let's see. You have to go in.
Yeah. You know, you can try it like 5 minutes or whatever.
As far as an individual game goes, two of my very favorites, Simotion. This made its debut in Tokenchines. It's a game with one hand tied behind your back, drop a ball into a wire track and spins around and comes out a hole on the bottom. Catch it and drop it in the top again. Then you have to do it with two balls in motion at the same time, and then three balls and so on. This was JT, Steven, and Aaron in the final individual immunity.
Yes.
It is a beautiful game. I wish I had one for my backyard. It just looks so fun to play. I was actually a little bit disappointed when it came back in a Redemption Island season. It was like, Stacy and Christina played this game at Redemption Island. And frankly, I didn't think that they were very good survivors. I was like, they don't deserve to play Simotion. That game is better than them.
Yeah.
That was the one where they were calling Coach Ben to get his goat. They're calling him Benjamin Wade.
Yeah.
Coach, you actually, the two self.
I forgot about Survivor Stacy. I love Survivor Stacy.
Now, Stacy, was her quote, Halloween jokes, Chuck E. the Cheese jokes.
I
think she accused Coach of making Halloween jokes and Chuck E. the Cheese jokes, and I don't know what those are. So if any listener could tell me what is a...
I don't think I've ever heard Coach tell a joke.
No.
Not an intentional one.
Yeah, the punchline of the story about the pygmies naming what part of his body they were most eager to eat was kind of like a joke.
Yeah.
This is not a Coach joke, but this is one of my all-time favorite Survivor lines regarding challenges. Okay, one was Courtney Yates, who in the pregame on China was talking about how, I'm not a great athlete, so if they're going to have us, like run with a spoon on an egg, I'm not going to be very good at that. And I had just been hired in the challenge department, and I was like, we don't do egg on spoon races. That's a picnic game. I'm disparaging our challenges. And my wife is watching this clip with me, and she goes, oh my God, I love her. And I was like, yeah, well, she's not going to be around for long. And I was dead wrong about that. Survivor finalist, Courtney Yates. But my favorite quote is in Survivor Tokenchines when Brandon's tribe is getting mad at him about performing in a game, and Brandon goes, we're throwing balls underhanded at tiles that are beneath us. None of us has ever done this before. And Coach's hand goes in the air and he goes, I have. Because Coach has had so much life experience that he's done this challenge before.
And Survivor experience.
That was in his first season.
Yes.
And then that came back to haunt him when he was struggling at a rope-a-dope challenge with a carabiner. And Jeff in his commentary was like, Coach, all that life experience could not prepare him for the rope-a-dope.
Yeah. Oh, man.
But anyhow, Stacy, Halloween jokes and Simotion on Redemption Island.
I can't. You know what? Boop, bam, pow. I don't remember what her catchphrase was.
It didn't catch. It was just a phrase.
I used to have the sound clip.
Another beautiful
blam. The blam was in there.
Blam,
I think. Yeah. Blam, pow, boom, something like that.
I can't pull it. What's the merge tribe in Fans versus Favorites? Dabu,
yeah,
or Dabu, whatever tribe Dabu was in. Dabu, blam, pow. Another individual game that I love is from Samoa, Square Peg Round Hole. This was a stage game. You had to use a grappling hook to make it into the finals. And there was a great moment where Russell had his item grappled and was dragging it towards the start line, but stopped to give a smug look. And then another contestant overtook him, and he did not make it into the end game.
Yeah.
He pulled like a tortoise in the hare kind of situation.
Yes,
there.
Yes.
So you had different shaped blocks that you had to fit into holes. And each time you pushed a block into the hole, it would dislodge another block that would fall into a tray beneath. And you had to pick that block up and fit into a hole. It was a little bit like a vertical version of the tabletop game Perfection.
Yes.
And Shambo was in it, and Laura Moret dominated this game. We know what a challenge beast Laura Moret is. She did it like she had done it before, and Shambo ended the game still holding one of the pieces that she started with, looking at it in her hand. She could have been there for a day and been like, what do I do with this?
Right, right.
A beautiful game. I don't know if we'll ever see that played again, but just really, I loved it. All-time great challenge, the vertical maze from Vanuatu, the final four. Mm-hmm. Holy mackerel, that was a beautiful game. One of the other things about it that was so nice is it was early enough, it was only season 9, that they're racing through this vertical maze, and it was Chris, Eliza, Scout, and Twyla. Chris won a great immunity, didn't have the stiffest competition of all time. Eliza and Twyla put in a good showing. It was not a particularly close call. Scout, good sport. And they're racing through the vertical maze, collecting letter tiles, and then they have to unscramble a phrase. The phrase they had to unscramble was Final 3. Now, at this stage, there have been so many Survivor word puzzles that Final 3 would probably be too easy to give to the contestants. But it was early enough that it was fair. Mm-hmm. And you know, you've got some F's and some H's in there, so you're looking like, well, what is this phrase going to be? Very appropriate. And then Chris, you know, he did a great victory dance when he won that challenge, so that was some nice TV as well. So really good challenge, a beautiful build. That one, if you rewatch nothing else, go back and look at the vertical maze in the final episode of Vanuatu. I don't know if they've ever equaled it. I mean, there have been some other great builds, but that was a beautiful one. The blindfolded maze from Heroes versus Villains. Now, this was a reference to the blindfolded maze you competed in at the Amazon.
Oh, yeah.
But there were a couple things.
Fun times, Miles.
Super. Really?
Memories, yeah.
Yeah. What do you remember about the blind maze?
Well, the problem was, and this was at the final, this was the final four, and yeah, this was when Jenna won immunity. The biggest problem was that it had been raining so much for the last day and a half or whatever, that you had to be blind, and you had to sort of like feel like almost like in Braille, like this raised type of like, here's what the direction to go.
Tactile symbols guiding you.
But it had been so wet and rainy, you had like your fingers were like, you know, all shriveled up. So you couldn't really, you know, and I don't know if Jenna, because being, you know, having smaller fingers, mm-hmm, had a better advantage not to take anything away. But, you know, it was very difficult to be able to, you know, figure out what was what.
Well, I thought it was because you were all too busy using your hands to grope Jenna, and that's why you weren't finding Vita.
I remember... She had a pretty heavy raincoat on.
I just remember her complaining during the challenge that she was getting groped left and right.
Because, yeah,
blindfolded people stumbling about.
Yes.
Groping in the darkness, not groping in like a frottage way.
Got it. Yeah. Got it.
But the way, there were two things I think, or there were a couple things I thought made the Heroes versus Villains iteration of that maze even more spectacular. One was that, I don't know if you've noticed, but mazes are all now half height.
Yes.
And they're better for camera. They're still just as challenging mentally. And I think it's just more TV friendly to have the mazes be half height. And there was that amazing finish stretch with Jerry, Parvati, and Russell all blindly working their way towards the necklace, which was on the course. The first person to touch the necklace could win it. And Russell was the only one who went hand over hand on the rope leading him to the end. It was a split second finish. It was really exciting.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember Jerry, who I think is a really good sport and performs very strongly in the challenges, after it was over and Russell wins, she takes off her blindfold and she goes, "That was really fun, you guys," which I thought it was a good demonstration of sportsmanship.
Yeah.
And then Sandra goes, "No, it wasn't. That sucks."
Yeah.
Classic Sandra moment.
Yeah.
So that covers most of my favorites. You know, I love paddling in a challenge. I think it's really fair.
Yeah.
And it demonstrates teams who can work together. The heroes in the Heroes versus Villains, they couldn't do much right, but they paddled together really well. You know, it just shows teamwork. And there have been some puzzle catch-ups that I love. The first immunity challenge in One World, there was a puzzle that I think Bill Posley assembled that looked like a tree. There were these like vertical spindly pieces. It wasn't your standard angular puzzle that fits into a horizontal frame. I think they reused a variation of that puzzle in Cochrane's final immunity,
yes,
in Karamoan. Yeah, really beautiful puzzle. I really liked that. Or, you know, in Token Chains, there was something called the Coconut Code, where they had these coconuts that if they put them on the posts correctly, they spelled out a 4-digit number in like a calculator font. That was really great and clever and imaginative. These are all, you know, all these little components that I like.
Do you guys ever look to things like apps for like okay, this is a popular app that people are playing. This would be conducive to something that's, you know, that would be a good, be like not ripping something off, but like, okay, this is like a, you know, a game like a 2048 or something like that.
Inspiration can come from anywhere. I haven't been in the room when somebody's pitched an idea based on an app. I'm sure it's happened, but watching foreign game shows or old game shows, or like I get a lot of ideas doing chores. Like I'm trying to get all the laundry onto the hangers and fit them all in the closet. I'm like, oh, could this be a challenge?
Yeah.
You know, like inspiration can come from all kinds of different places. I think, personally, I'd be a huge fan of an Angry Bird style challenge. I mean, they've done catapults before.
King of the Nerds did a challenge. Yeah, you should watch that. King of the Nerds had a lot of fun challenges.
There's a lot of challenge designers who've worked on Survivor, who worked on King of the Nerds. So yeah. I'm not surprised that the quality is high.
They take a game and they also have like sort of like a pop culture twist mm-hmm. on it, where it's like zombie Kerplunk or some sort of they did like sort of like Angry Birds, but with like a 3D thing with like. Sort of like, you know, you're shooting a real cannon at a wall. So it's a fun show.
I will look forward to it. Can I see it on Hulu Plus?
That we have to check out.
If we can, we'll cut that out. This never happened.
All right. Do you have any way that if somebody has a great idea, because everybody thinks they have a great idea.
Yeah.
Do you allow people to contact you?
Yeah. I'm on Twitter. I'm at Miles Nye. I'm that Miles guy on Twitter, in Sophie Clark's words.
Yes.
Reach out. And if you have an idea, a good idea can come from anywhere.
Give the spelling, because it's a little.
Uh-huh. Yeah. MYLESNYE. My first name is Miles, but spelled with a Y. And my last name is Bill Nye, the science guy.
And if you are somebody who's in the Los Angeles area and you are looking to have some sort of a corporate team building challenge, what should you do?
You can go to wiseguysevents.com. That's the website for my business. You can learn more about the challenge work that I do and my corporate scavenger hunts at milesnye.com. That is a good way to reach me. Yeah.
All right. Well, Miles, thank you so much for coming by and talking about challenges and all sorts of other stuff. Was there anything else?
Sorry, can I end with one last thing?
Sure thing.
Well, I like the angle on the podcast where you end with a hashtag for people who listened all the way to the end.
Hashtag.
So, you know, I don't want to. My goal today was to describe challenges. I'm not interested in peeking behind the curtain because I sign NDAs. And, you know, I don't. And also, you know, because we all work as a team, my background is in theater. Everything that goes into the show is a collaboration. So I'm not really here to say, I did this and this is my great contribution, especially because most of the important work that happens on location where I'm not even on the same continent. Mm-hmm. But I am going to brag about one thing that can turn into a hashtag. So I walked into the challenge room one day and John was so excited. He says, we've got this great challenge. And it went on to air in Fans versus Favorites. And he said, they're going to go into an underwater long cage and it's full of coconuts. The coconuts for both tribes are mixed in there. So they're going to have to push them back. They're going to bob to the surface of the water and then they're going to carry them back to the beach. This turned out to be a great challenge for Ozzy, you know, diving deep and being underwater for a long time. And they get their 10 coconuts back to the start line and they unscramble them and it spells Survivor or it spells Immunity. I mean, we've done both of those. What's something that has about 10 letters? And I said, well, how about Triumphant? And John goes, Triumphant? Yeah, that'll work. So then, months later, I'm watching the show and these coconuts are bobbing up out of the water and I see a U and I see a P and I'm like, oh, maybe that. And then they're unscrambling them. It's Eliza and Ceree, but James is actually the one who goes, could it be Triumphant? And Eliza and Ceree start moving the coconuts around and James goes, don't tell me, I solved the puzzle. And it was this great feeling, almost as though I had reached through the screen and painted the letters on the coconuts myself. So for those who listen to the end, hashtag challenge lefty or hashtag triumphant.
I thought you were going to say old maid.
In old maid.
Yes. All right. Well, Miles, thank you so much for coming on. This was very fun. I think a lot of people are going to enjoy this look back at all of the challenge stuff. We're going to be doing one more, or we've been doing one a week of these Survivor podcasts all the way up to Survivor San Juan del Sur. Am I pronouncing that right?
I've been there, and it's San Juan del Sur.
Still sir.
Yeah, okay. Regular, like, sir. Yes, sir.
Yes, sir. And we will see what...
Like, yes, sir.
Yeah. That's right. And so we'll see what Miles has in store for us in Survivor 29. Lots of fun. Let us know what you think in the comments. And, of course, lots more of our Big Brother podcast coming Wednesday, Thursday. We'll have the exit interview on Friday. And, of course, if you want to be there live when we speak with Brendan and Rachel on our special Big Brother live event at the Hollywood Improv, hope you can join us there. You can find out more about tickets at robiswebsite.com/RHAP live. Have a great one, everybody. We'll talk to you again soon. Bye.